Le set. Welcome, Christian Israel patriots and white separatists everywhere. This is Yahweh's Covenant People, Friday night, March 22nd, 2019. This is the equinox, folks. It's the equinox. And or the day after. I haven't been actually counting. But they had a beautiful sunset, direct due west. Straight down Belmont Avenue, which goes due east and west. So the sunset right over Belmont Avenue. It only happens twice a year, at the spring equinox and at the fall equinox. So, Pastor Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. You were excluding some people there, Eli.
I was?
Yes. Well, welcome all you trolls. Welcome all you trolls. All you geeks, all you space aliens, all you race traitors, all you kikes, and all you spies, and all you government agents that are listening.
All right, very
good.
Hi,
how you doing tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they need to learn things too, right?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we're going to give you your weekly dose of hate here.
All right.
along with some instruction. It's called history.
Yeah, really.
History, and you really hate to hear it. So there's your dose of hate.
Right. There you go.
It's your hate, not ours.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to continue.
I'm wound up this week. Yeah. I mean,
we're going to continue our series on the Hungarians. Who was it? Magor and Hunor. I guess they were twin brothers. And I'm still confused as to whether they are descendants of Japheth or Ham. And so I did a little digging. And Pastor Steve, I sent you this article, The A to Z of the Ancient Chaldeans. So I'm going to read a little bit from it, not a whole lot. I got two or three other sources I want to quickly mention here to get some clarity on where the Hungarians actually descend from, okay? And this is entitled The A to Z of the Ancient Chaldeans and the Relation to the Modern Chaldeans. Okay, before we get into the main subject, we need first to distinguish between the ancient Chaldeans and the Babylonians. The fact that the Chaldean dynasty ruled over Babylon for 87 years only, and that was from 626 to 539 BC, that was during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, should not be interpreted as if that the Babylonians became Chaldeans. The Ottoman Turks ruled Mesopotamia for almost 400 years, a rule that ended basically at the end of World War I, and officially with the crowning of Prince Faisal I, king of the newly established country, Iraq. Is there any confusion today about who the inhabitants of Iraq are? Does anybody call the Iraqis Ottoman Turks? No. All right. The Sumerian, Akkadian, Assyrian, and Babylonian civilizations existed thousands of years before the Chaldeans were ever mentioned in Mesopotamian history. Okay. This suggests to me, okay, let me have one more sentence here. After their appearance in southern Mesopotamia around 10th century BC, they began continuous rebellions against the Babylonians. How the Babylonians felt toward the Chaldeans is well documented in many sources. It is a historical known fact that when the Persians entered Babylon 539 BC and hence ended the rule of the Chaldean kings, the Babylonians met the Persians with cheers and treated them as liberators. Okay, so it appears to me, Pastor Steve, that the Chaldeans are probably Hebrews, probably related to Haran, because this is exactly the time of year just before Abraham. It was 1000 BC. Okay. Well, let's see, 1500 BC, Abraham.
They were on the move, and they went into Hodu Kush, which is named after Hindu. Okay, Hodu Kush, which is India. They were all over. They were in Pakistan. They were, you know, all the Brahmins in India. They were on the move through all that area, and the area of Hungary right now is sort of a buffer and a gateway between the east and the west, like Romania. It's part east, it's part west today. So it is quite possible that you are very correct that they were Hebrews that were in the process of migration.
Okay.
Because we went all over the place. We came over to this country, to the United States, on the reed boats, all over Europe. I mean, we were the tribe of Dan, were the seafarers, and they were with the Phoenicians. They sort of amalgamated into one group of people, and we were world travelers. We're going out, and Dan left before the Exodus out of Egypt. A great deal of Dan accessed the seacoast, and they took off.
Right.
Because they were explorers and adventurers. I mean, that's the nature of our people. We have pioneered and gone into the wildernesses of the entire planet. So nothing really would surprise me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because our people are so widespread. We're supposed to have the whole dominion of the whole place.
Yeah, because this is the era of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel and the confusion of tongues and the spreading of people all over the place. Okay, so...
Well, look at the Hebrew connections, the Hebrew language connections, and all our European tongues that we speak. It's in German, it's in English, it's in French, there it is. We're all over the place. And there's Hebrew words, customs, that we don't even know. We are finally finding our past identity. That's what this show and this whole station is about. It's Eurofolk Radio, people of European descent, which were of Hebrew descent, which were Israelites. And the Israelites are all over, and here we are.
Right. Okay.
Gotta love it, man. Gotta love it.
So the Chaldeans appear to have made the scene after the Hungarians, the Magyars and the Hunars left. Okay. So but here in a DNA study called Biblical Anthropology, Noah's Sons and Their Descendants, it says here, the Hungarians, for example, claim to be descendants of Noah's son Japheth. In the Hungarian origin stories, Nimrod had two sons, Magor and Hunor, which we have related in the first couple of segments here. Magor is the equivalent of the Afro-Asiatic name Magog and the Hungarian word Magyar. Magyar is the name for the Hungarian people. Some Magyars still live in the Upper Nile area, where they are called the Magyar Ab, the Magyar tribe. This study compared the Y DNA of the Hungarians with the Finno-Ugrian population to understand why modern Hungarians have so little of the typical Uralic haplogroup N1C. The fact is, the Hungarians are R1, just like most Anglo-Saxon, most Caucasians are. Okay, so this ascribes them to Japheth. However, Nimrod was a Hamite, okay, and he's a son of let me look in. Okay, here's Nimrod's genealogy. son of Cush.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Carnabal. I guess Carnabal is the mother, whoever Carnabal is. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Never heard of Carnabal. Okay, so he's the son of Cush. All right, so that would be, you know, the that would be Ham. Okay, he's a Hamite, all right?
But the Hamites were Adamite people.
Yes, they were. Absolutely, absolutely. So, and there's a tradition that they descend from Ham as well, okay? So let's take the DNA article at face value and say that they are the sons of Japheth, okay? Which would make them our kinsmen, and that would explain the difference in language, the radical difference in language, because Hungarian is radically different from German, English, etc., etc., okay? That would make them the sons of Japheth.
That is due to the influence of the nations that they passed through on their way there.
Right.
They picked up the language of the indigenous people, and it changed their basic language structure, like it has. There are areas of the United States that speak entirely different languages, and they're speaking English, but boy, oh boy.
Right.
It's tough. It's tough. To understand a lot of them, because they do that. And David James is from Boston. He has a different accent than I do.
Right.
Because of my college education, my accent is less. But Brother Patrick, he speaks just plain, good old Tennessee English.
Yeah, Southern drawl.
Well, I have a lot of that. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of that, but due to broadcasting, I've got rid of a lot of it.
Right. Yeah. You can fade in and out of it.
I fade in and out. Just depends on whether I get relaxed or not.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So, I think that clears that up a little bit, because I'm trying to distinguish the Hungarians from the other Caucasians, and I think that's probably the best area to pursue, that they're the descendants of Japheth, okay, who happened to be living in the same area as Nimrod, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and right after the death of Noah, there would have been a lot of Hamites, Japhethites, and Shemites living together, and, you know, not too distant from one another. And that until the confusion of languages happened, then they would have spread out far and wide, okay? This was probably Yahweh's way of making sure everybody spread far and wide, okay? All right, so now I think with that understanding, we can go back to the article, Myths About the Hungarians. You want to take it from where we left off?
Yeah, I just had a hit of coffee.
Okay.
I have to relate this before we go further. I'd run out of paper to print with, so I went out to Office Depot, and I bought an entire case of premium paper for these books that I print out.
Uh-huh.
And bringing an entire full 10 ream case home on that scooter, on the rack that I made, the new rack for the back. That was a unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
okay,
I weigh 200-something pounds, and then that case weighs, 10 reams of premium paper.
That's
pretty heavy.
That's heavy, yeah.
And I'm in that, and all these idiots, and they race from stoplight to stoplight.
Right.
And they go, whoom, and go right past me, and I come up, and I'm right next to them at the light.
Yeah, right.
And I just sort of look over, what an idiot.
Yeah, right.
Well, that thing only does 35 miles an hour, and the speed limit's 50. Yeah, but 35 will get you from stoplight to stoplight.
Yeah.
And if I catch it right,
yeah,
and I keep my speed even, I won't hit a red light. I'll go through 8 or 10 red lights.
Mm-hmm. Green lights.
At that the green lights, yeah, at that lower speed.
Right.
Because I time my speed to match the lights. They turn green as I'm approaching them, and then everybody ahead of me starts up, and I just meld right in with the traffic. I'm right up on the back of them. And then they all go through, and then they race on down the street, and then they hit a red light, but by the time I catch up with them, it turns green.
Right.
And here we go again.
So it's the hare and the tortoise.
It's just so funny. But anyway, where we left off was this paragraph, and I'll get started here. A further misleading factor is that the Medes were likely related with the Hurrians, at least by the Aryan elements that both peoples had in common. Aryans. Hear mm-hmm. that, folks?
Yeah.
As it has been said before, the Medes were rather a group of tribes more than a homogeneous people. Indeed, the Uman Manda, host of the Medes, of the Babylonian Chronicles, apparently included many nomadic bands of probable Scythian or Sarmatian stock.
Okay.
According to Herodotus, the Greek historian, the Medes were composed by six different tribes, of which one were the Medes properly, Madai. Four of them seem to be actually Scythian-related groups, and one is the prestigious caste of the Magi.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Who were the Magi, and which was their origin?
Now, Magi sounds very much like Magyar.
Okay. Uh-huh, that's all related.
All right.
The
okay.
Magi, indeed, belong to a particular lineage traced from the earliest times. They were the same Kasdim, that's Chaldeans,
right.
of Babylon, namely Sumerians. With the Semitic expansion and the Akkadian rule over Lower Mesopotamia, the displaced Sumerians moved toward the Zagros region, from where the Kasdim returned back to Babylon as the king's counselors, and from where the Magi, or Magi, that joined the Medes came from as well.
Okay.
Therefore, they were two branches of the same people. Their name, Magi, probably referred in origin to their secret language, Emigir, while their Semitic name was Kasdim, meaning Sumerian, Chaldean. However, the Magi of Media and later also of Persia probably resulted from an alliance between two counterparts that met in the Zagros to gather and become one people, the Sumerians and the Subarians, Emeshal and Emegir, which reflects the constant duality of the Hungarian origins.
Okay.
Like the most ancient pairs, male, female, black, white, north, south, east, west, Kasdim, Magi, Hunor, Magor, the Mitanni aristocracy joined the Chaldean one. The once influent caste in fallen kingdoms became the Magi of the rising Media. Of course, both the Magi of Media Persia and the Kasdim of the Babylonian court were just a selected class, as perhaps also the Mitanni in the Hurrian realm, not the whole of the Sumerian-Subarian people. Besides this particular elite, there must have been a mass of non-aristocratic people, warriors, farmers, metal forgers, horse breeders, artisans, etc., that with the privileged class of the Hurrian, Babylonian or Persian court had in common only the language and genetic features.
Okay, so at this point, assuming that the Hurrians are the people of Haran, which and Nahor, which are Shemites because they're related to Abraham. The Babylonians would have been Hamites, and the Persians would have been Aram, also Shemites. Okay, so we can see that the Japhethites, the Hamites, and the Shemites were still all, and their how should I put it, their descending tribes, various offshoots of them, were kind of intermingling, although they maintained their separate identity. They had a lot, of trade and sometimes made political alliances, etc., among one another. This seems to be what's going on here. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, I had to mute my mic because I had to sneeze. The weather is changing drastically here.
Yeah.
And we're starting to get pollen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's getting warm, and I'm riding around on my scooter, and Scooter Man, Scooter Man. The Magi are commonly associated with the Zoroastrian cult, yet in origin it seems that they did not follow such religious philosophy, but the essential patterns of the ancient Sumerian religion, which they developed as a mystery belief. And only later they joined the revolutionary monotheistic dualistic reformation by the Zarathustra.
Okay.
Why did the Magi adopt such a novelty within a polytheistic environment? The following may be a feasible explanation. We have already established that the Magi, like the Kastim, were a social class into which individuals of different ethnic backgrounds may be accepted if they fulfill particular requirements and follow an initiation ritual.
Okay, it's a priesthood. It's primarily a priesthood. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. And who came to see Christ at his birth?
All right, the Magi. That's right. Okay.
The identity of both groups is also confirmed by the fact that the
Judahite
prophet Daniel, they have Jewish. They just don't get it, folks.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The prophet Daniel, appointed by King Nebuchadnezzar as the head of the Kasdim, was confirmed by King Dariush, the Mede. As one of the chief officers of the Medo-Persian kingdom, a position that was a privilege of the Magi.
So Daniel was a Magi. Didn't realize that. Did not realize that. Okay. All right.
On the other side, the very identity of the Zarathustra is shrouded in mystery.
Okay.
And even the period in which he lived is uncertain. If the conventional date is correct, he should have lived some few years before Daniel and was his contemporary for a while.
Okay.
Also, his birthplace is subject of controversy, but the most commonly accepted one is Mada Atropatene. There's that Mada again.
Right. All right.
Although his preaching is said to have taken place in Khwarizm. Also, the original Zoroastrian philosophy is not known in detail, as many things were added in later times, like they have to the Judeo-Christian churches.
Okay.
But it was essentially presented as the only widely known monotheistic belief in the ancient world beside Judaism. Well, no, that would be
Mosaism.
Yeah. Mosaism, not Judaism. Like I said, they just don't get it.
So it was only the Shemites that practiced a monotheistic religion. So I think, Zarathustra, maybe the namesake of Zara. Okay, maybe the namesake of Zara still lived on in that area. Okay. There were some Zaraites, not too many. Because most of the Zaraites had disappeared, north of the Egyptian captivity, north of Egypt, 1500 BC. All right. But there were some Zerahites, not too many, that accompanied the his brother into the Middle East. Okay, Pharez. Okay, back to you.
Well, it's Zarach and Peretz.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Notwithstanding, there are some interesting elements concerning places and periods. Mada Atropatene was a Mitanni settlement. Khwarizm was a Hurrian realm. And since the 7th century BCE, a consistent Israelite component was added to these people, as well as Daniel, and at least 3 of his companions were appointed as ministers at the Babylonian court. It is very likely that some Israelites took similar positions at Nineveh. At least we know of Ahikar, who may be only a legendary character, but may also be a real person.
Okay.
Also, Asarhaddon's wife, Nakia Zakutu, was either an Israelite or an Aramean. They're kissing cousins, okay?
Mm-hmm.
After the fall of Nineveh, some of the northern Israelites joined the Hurrians in Mitanni on their way eastward, carrying with them their consciousness of the one God that they worshipped in the past. Consequently, Zarathustra may have been an Israelite who was appreciated by his prophetic gifts at the court of Vishtaspa and promoted to the rank of Rab Mag. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the same way as Daniel and probably Ahikar. Rab Mag as Magi, a soothsayer or prophet,
mm-hmm.
Rab Mag. The land where it is thought he was born was inhabited by Mitanni. The one where he preached was founded by Hurrians. In both of them, there were also Israelites. In other words, we were scattered throughout the region.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Even though the number of northern Israelites deported was not so enormous, beside the 27,290 claimed by Sargon II, we may guess that those previously exiled by Tiglath-Pileser III may double that amount. After 2 centuries, they should have become an important component within the Mesopotamians, and not only influenced the priestly class, but also the common people. Besides these figures, if the prison of Sennacherib is reliable, he exiled 200,250 people from Yehuda, the territory of Judah, although it is known that he failed in taking Jerusalem, having great loss within his army, a fact that the most arrogant of Assyrian kings obviously did not mention.
I think they were
like
all
our
arrogant.
News
fake
today.
News.
They just,
fake news.
Fake news.
Right.
Why does everybody hate you? Why can't you tell the truth? Oh, I love those girls singing that. They are there. They got it.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, he may have taken captives from the other cities of Yehuda during his campaign, as he himself settled at Lachish. The deportees of Yehuda were very likely resettled together with the Israelites of previous deportations, joining the northern and southern tribes.
Okay, together.
Part of the Israelites were relocated in the cities of the Medes, the Madai, a vague definition that may comprise from Zagros region to the lake Urmia. Beside this, as it was said before, the Magi were probably the result of an alliance between 2 counterparts that met in Zagros, namely the Sumerians and the Mitanni, these ones already having Hebrews among them. Consequently, the adoption of Zoroastrianism by the Magi may be a direct influence of some Israelites that occupied key position within their caste.
Hence the monotheism.
It is significant that the Medo-Persian monarchs were quite sympathetic toward the Judeans, the Judahites.
Right.
They have Jews here again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They're waking up gradually. But
gradually.
These articles are older.
Yes.
One of the first imperial decrees concerned the return to their homeland and the order to rebuild Jerusalem and the temple. The Parthians followed the same favorable policy.
Right, and that's Peretz, Parthians.
Okay, Parthian Peretz.
So you see
you want
that,
me to finish this?
Yeah, but Zarathustra was a Persian practicing monotheism. So more than likely, he was a Hebrew. Hard to say whether he was an Israelite or not, but definitely a Hebrew.
He took on the territorial name of Persia. That's Paras.
Right.
He was a Parasian.
Okay. All right. Please continue.
All right. This section, the Assyrians did not only introduce the Israelite element in the Mesopotamian and Iranian populations, but also carried away some of these people to Samaria. Mm-hmm. Babylonians, the Assyrians did not only introduce, no, I just read that. The Babylonians,
Elamites,
Aramaeans, yes. Afarsakites, Aparni, and Dihites, that is Dahe, Scythians. These immigrants intermarried with the Israelites, left in Samaria, and became Judean. After some centuries, they didn't become Jewish.
Right.
Okay. So that in the only Hebrew records existing from the first century CE, the Gospels and Josephus, we find that there were the Judeans properly and others that were Judeans by belief, but technically Goyim.
Well, no, the nations, Galileans.
Right, the Galileans.
They were Judah, right. House of Judah.
Right, Galilee of the nations. Indeed, their land was called Galil Hagoyim, Galilee of the nations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Israelite nations,
the Samaritans have a different background, but it is off topic here. They were the same people, the Samaritans, but they had a king that based his kingdom in Samaria and apostatized and made those golden calves.
Right.
And it corrupted their religious belief, and that's why the pure Israelites of Jerusalem wouldn't have anything to do with them, because they were apostate. It was a religious, not a racial difference.
Right.
There were also some strange connections and spiritual movements that flourished mainly in Galilee, of which the best known were the Essens, whose philosophy was close to that of the Magi. The reason of such a coincidence may be found in the ethnic origin of the Galileans.
Okay.
Well, wasn't Yeshua HaMashiach from Galilee?
Galilee, right. However, the Essenes were originally of Judah from Jerusalem. They settled in Galilee to get away from the corruption of the city of Jerusalem.
Correct.
Okay, back to you.
They were very religiously strict.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Of course, as it was elucidated before, the Magi by themselves were not an ethnic group, but belonged to a people of Sumerian Mitanni origin, to which the Israelites were added. Who are these peoples today, and what is this essay is concerned about? Going back to the Hungarian legend, it says that Nemere Minrot asked his twin sons what ability they wanted to develop. Hunor chose the art of war, while Magor preferred wisdom.
Huh. Okay.
This episode may represent the covenant between two parts, or the composition of the ancient people. Wisdom is as a characteristic of the Magi, the art of war as the main feature of the Huns. Apparently, there are not many things in common between these two groups as to suggest such an association, but we can at least consider the possibility that a link actually exists.
Okay, so all the legends we've consulted so far suggest that they are, here again, if they're the sons of Nimrod, then they're Hamites. Okay, so that's a puzzle. I don't think we're going to be able to figure that one out, whether they're Japhethites
or Hamites. No, we just don't have enough
archaeological
and genealogical information.
Mm-hmm. But they would have merged with the Japhethites as they moved north. Maybe that's what's really going on here. So my initial speculation a couple of weeks ago was, you know, I thought that they were Hamites that moved north, which would have been...
Well, I don't think they were one distinctly pure tribe anymore. I think they have intermingled.
Right, with Japheth.
But the key is they're Aryans, and they are of Hebraic origin. The bloodline is there. They are Adamites. Therefore, they are brethren.
Okay. All right. Now, before I go into the next section, last week I asked about Balaam. Who was Balaam? Because he did not seem to be a Hebrew. He apparently was one of these Chaldean priests, a Kazdim. He's not referred to as a Kazdim, but let's see here. This is gracethroughfaith.com. Who was Balaam? Question. I always took it for granted that Balaam, son of Beor, was a descendant of Shem, the godly line of Noah. I assumed, that doesn't make Japheth and Ham ungodly. I assumed he was a descendant of Ebert, Hebrew speaking, and had some insight into Yahweh. It says in Numbers 31:8, the Israelites killed the kings of Midian, including Balaam, the son of Beor. Also, are the Midianites the sons of Japheth, the Madai from Genesis 10:2? Answer. Balaam, son of Beor, was not of the tribes of Israel. He was from Pethor in Aram, Naharaim. Okay, this could be Nahor. So he would have been a Hebrew if he is actually a member. But remember that Abraham's family were Baal worshippers.
Terach was of Aram. They had idols, weather gods, household idols, all that stuff. And Abram destroyed his father's idols. Therefore, he had to leave. Abram knew Yahweh.
Right. Okay. It says, Aram Naharaim, Deuteronomy 23:4, a place on the Euphrates River in northwest Mesopotamia. So it would have been north, the north of where Israel was hanging out in those days. Okay. Balaam was a prophet for hire. They had him in those days, too.
he was a Joel Osteen of his day.
Right. Okay, who was warned by God not to prophesy against the Israelites, Numbers 22:9-12. He was killed by troops under the command of Moses, along with five kings of Midian in Numbers 31:8. So, chances are Balaam was a Hebrew, or a Shemite.
An apostate.
Yes, an apostate. Okay. That makes
How
a lot of sense.
How many of them have we got in Israel today, that are in all these little woo-woo sects, man? Right. They're bad-mouthing Yahweh now.
Right.
It's really getting deep out there.
But it seems like the Kazdim, the Chaldean priesthood / Magi, were the most, how should we put it, the most fashionable, the ones with the biggest reputation. You know, it was an in thing to be a Kazdim in those days. And that name, Chaldean, that actually transmitted to Britain, the Chaldees. Mm-hmm. Okay. The early priesthood of Britain were referred to as the Chaldees. So yes. They probably, and the Cimmerians came from that area too. They probably carried this term Chaldee with them from Chaldea. Okay. Yeah. But they were Aryans. All right. Arpachshad and the Habiri. Arpachshad was the son of Shem, a brother of Asher, and an ancestor of the Hebrews according to the scriptures. Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, the sons of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arpachshad, Lud, and Aram. Shem was 100 years old and became the father of Arpachshad 2 years after the flood. The name of this mysterious ancestor of Abraham has been an object of different interpretations. Being one of the patriarchs as well as his brothers, he must have given origin to a nation, the one from which the Hebrews came as a branch. That nation were the Akkadians. Now, the Akkadians were Sumerians, from everything we've discussed so far. And they, you know, they may have had a branch of the Hebrews in there, but I hope he's not confusing Arphaxad with the Akkadians here. Okay. The Akkadians haven't been identified as Hebrews previously, but there may have been some Hebrews among them. Okay. Continuing. Yet the name of the Akkadians is not related to with their ancestor's name. And therefore, some meanings have been suggested. Arpachshad, the coast boundary of the Chaldeans. Okay, so that's where the name Arphaxad came from. The coast boundary of the Chaldeans, or else Arpachshad, that is an Egyptian name equivalent to Ur of the Chaldees. Okay, so the interrelationship of all of these different tribes and the three sons of Noah, in their relationship to one another, would have been very strong in Mesopotamia, and that's where all these names come from. Continuing.
Well, what they've done with all these things is so confusing because they have mingled languages,
right,
and meanings. A word in one language might mean something else in another language,
right?
And they used it for a different purpose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these hypotheses seem to find support in Josephus' declaration that Arphaxad named the Arphaxadites, who are now called Chaldeans. Okay, so again, we found out that the Chaldeans did not appear until around 1000 BC. They're late arrivals. So the chances are that they are this priesthood and not a people per se. The Chaldeans.
Correct.
Hasdim. Okay.
That is correct. And that's a title rather than a formal name of a people.
Very good. These interpretations are, however, unlikely because Arphaxad is a proper name. Yeah, that's a proper name. But his name may have been derived from these two different groups of people. You know, it may have been. And the boundaries of the Chaldeans do not indicate any specific people, but rather an indeterminate geographic area. While an Egyptian terminology is completely out of place in this context, yeah, I would say so. Concerning Josephus, he probably referred to the Akkadians, calling them Chaldeans, based on the belief that Abraham was a Chaldean because he was born in Ur. Okay, so he was born in the territory of the Chaldeans. As we have seen before, Abraham is never called himself a Chaldean, but that he came out of a Chaldean city, in the same way as Moshe is never called Egyptian, although he was thought to be an Egyptian by Jethro's daughters because he came from Egypt and he had a nice dark tan, where he was born and was loved. But of course, in Egypt, in Arabia, he would have had an even darker tan, and was likely clad in an Egyptian, like an Egyptian, dressed like an Egyptian.
Well, he was raised in the royal court by the daughter of Pharaoh.
There you go. Yes. The Chaldeans, Kazdim, of the book of Genesis were indeed the Sumerians, not the Akkadians. Okay. Abraham is called Hebrew as well as Moshe. regardless of their birthplace. Yeah, well, that's because they are descended from Eber. Another interesting detail is that Arphaxad is Shem's third son and was born 2 years after the deluge. Unless Elam was born on the ark, which is improbable, the most likely possibility is that Arphaxad was Asher's twin brother. Regarding this hypothesis, we can find a parallel with two ancient neighbor cities, Asher and Arapka. From this viewpoint, the identity of Arphaxad with Arapka seems to be the most likely. Nevertheless, Arapka was not always a Semitic land and was instead a center of Hurrian culture. But if a Hurrian is Haran, then we're talking about Abraham's brother.
That's right.
Okay.
See, this, they get it. It's the language changed.
Mm-hmm.
These are perversions of
yeah.
other words.
Right.
That they have changed in pronunciation and spelling. The same way Aramean is almost the same as Hebrew, except for spelling
right.
and pronunciation of only some terms. Otherwise, it's the same.
Yeah.
But it was different enough
yeah.
that if they were speaking Aramean, it was sometimes difficult to understand if you were only raised with Hebrew and if you used Aramean terms. Yeshua mm-hmm. Messiah spoke Aramaic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I grew up speaking Low German.
That's which, right. Yeah, Unterdeutsch.
Which is common in Austria. Vienna, right. Austria, they all speak Low German there. High German, you have to go way up north to the ocean. Okay, where they
well, my folks were from Wiesbaden.
Okay,
and my grandmother Olga spoke Hochdeutsch.
Okay, yeah,
and that's what I was raised yeah. with, Hochdeutsch. So, yeah. and I've lost most of it because nobody uses Hochdeutsch today
anymore. Right?
No, it's a dead language.
But I would say in the schools you're taught High German.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go home, you speak Low German. So yeah. People who speak Low German know both. But people who speak High German rarely know the Low German. Okay? So that's a... I can understand both fluently.
Right.
Okay? I can understand both. The difference is minute, you know. For example, in High German, ich bin ein Deutscher. I am a German.
A German, that's yeah. right.
In Low German, it's ich bin Deutsch, okay? They drop the CH. They don't pronounce it ich, they just pronounce it ich. And then they turn it to B, ich bin instead of EB. You can drop the IN and turn it into B.
Right.
So they shorten, it's just like in London, what do you call it, Andy Cap? They drop a lot of the consonants. It's kind of like lazy talk, right? They drop the consonants. So you can see how the same language can be unintelligible to one group of people, mainly the people who originated the language in the first place, right? They don't understand the new dialect that occurred, all right? Okay, so let's continue. All right, so regarding this hypothesis, we can find a parallel with two ancient neighbor cities, Asher and Arapka. Okay, this divergence may anyway be solved. It is known that the Akkadians arrived in Sumer from the north and that they were the same stock of the Assyrians. Previous to the Semitic takeover, we know that Nimrod extended his Sumerian kingdom over northern Mesopotamia, and even Kala, in the very heart of Assyria, was called Nimrod during the Assyrian Dark Ages. So we have Nimrod, a son of Ham, ruling over this area at that time. Therefore, it is feasible that the two original Semitic centers, Asher and Arapka, were colonized by the Sumerian peoples. While the Shemites of Asher remained in their original settlement, those of Arapka moved southwards and settled in Akkad, taking that city from the Sumerians and later the whole land. Arabka was first annexed to Assyria by Shamshi Adad I about 1810 BC. That's a long time ago. Yeah. But conquered by the Mitanni by 1470 BC and remained Hurrian city until the Assyrians took it back after it completely obliterated by the Mitanni kingdom around 1270 BC. Again,
no, they obliterated the Mitanni kingdom. Obliterated by the Mitanni.
Okay, and they, after they completely obliterated the Mitanni kingdom in 12. Okay, so this is the era of Abraham. Okay.
Right.
The Semitic cultural identity of Arabka by the time of Abraham, 10 generations after Arpakshad, is proven by the tablets of Nuzi, which show surprising coincidences with the Pentateuch concerning social practices and laws regarding family life, marriage, adoptions, birthright, blessings, trade, etc. In the tablets, also Habiru are mentioned, and a particular law that established the Habiru servant can be hired for a maximum period of 7 years, then must be let free.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
More and more backup for the quote unquote Old Testament. These people that are railing that it's a devil book.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. But all this proves that all of these are Aryan peoples.
Yes.
With a smattering of possibly non-Aryan slaves thrown in. Okay, because once these became military empires, slavery became common, right? So the closest non-Aryan slave material would have been the Dravidians of India, okay? That would be southern India, and those people are virtually black, okay? Through the centuries and different ruling powers, the region of Arabka Nuzi remained a meeting point of Shemitic and Sumerian cultures. Okay, now, where is this taking us? Now, what relationship has all of this with our topic? It was said before that this essay is arranged like a puzzle, and this is one of the pieces. No, this is arranged like, what was that ancient game? Stadium Checkers.
Yeah.
This game.
This is three-dimensional.
Right, three-dimensional checkers.
Man, I'll tell you.
Right. The geographic location of Arabka by the eastern border of Assyria on the way towards Media is relevant, as the descent of Arpakshad, there's too many similar sounding names here, folks. May have been split following different directions. We only know that the lineage of Abraham because it was recorded in the scriptures. But obviously there were other descendants. The main line of the Arpakshadites were the Akkadians. Mm-hmm. Of history. A branch of them known as the Habiru. Okay, well, the Akkadians would have been Habiru. Maybe a branch of the Hebrews were still known as Hebrews and not by any other name. Others may have been assimilated into the Hurrian Mitanni groups.
Well, the H is misleading. We use Hebrews.
All right.
But it is
Eber,
Eber, which was the father of the Ibrim.
Right.
Because they changed the pronunciation and spelling for the descendants. Ibri is Hebrew. Not Hebrew, but Ibri. I-B-R-I-Y. And that's Hebrew. Hebrew plural is Ibrim.
Mm-hmm.
With an M, that pluralizes it.
Right.
Because it's similar in sounding, these are English spellings.
Right.
I make you a bet it was Ibiru or Abiru or Ebiru, one or the other originally. Make you a bet it wasn't Habiru with the H.
Right.
That is an added English appellation.
Right. Well, it's quite possible, too, that the Assyrians and or Sumerians had a habit of adding the CH.
All right. Well, in front. Assyria. It is not Assyria. It is Ashur.
Right.
And it is Ashurim for the Assyrians. There we go. It, the anglicization of these words disrupts the language studies today because people are bound to the English language, which is inaccurate when associated with biblical terms. You have to go to the original language and use the original spelling and pronunciation. That's why I stress that. And a lot of people are rebellious and buck that because it's too doggone much work.
Yeah,
and that's what it is. It's laziness. Ugh. And that's why I catch a lot of flack from these people that don't want to listen to CI.
They don't want to do word studies.
and don't want to do any of the word
studies. Hebrew.
Like the people, like the people in these videos that are following Professor Poop.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You just do that Hebrew.
You're just trying to show
you're
off.
You're just trying to impress people. No, I'm trying to be accurate so my people learn something.
Right. Well, my suggestion here is that the H was introduced by the Aramaic because the Assyrians had a habit of doing a CH in front of a word that begins with a vowel, such as A or Hebrew. So, because the Cimmerians, who was the king of Israel?
Omri.
Omri. Yeah. Well, the Assyrians called them Gomri. That's a hard version of the CH. Okay. And he is known, and then the British or the Greeks call them the Cimmerians. They put it turned into
Cimmerians,
a K.
That's right.
All right.
And then it became the Cimmerians.
Right. Right. So then
they're all Israelite lineage.
Right. They're all Israelites. But King
it's just
Omri,
the language is the words have been changed by mistranslators or
fashion
in different parts of
exactly.
The country.
Exactly. In this case it's because his name was Omri, not Gomri or Kimri or Kumri. It was Omri, no K, no CH.
Well, that's why people like us have gray hair, because of all the doggone word study.
Right.
That nobody said this was easy.
Right.
And
yeah.
People that are angry because we debunk their little pet theories. That don't want to put out the word, the study, they get mad at us.
Right, for being studious.
But it's not our fault that we're not lazy.
Right.
Look at Rob, Brother Hebert. All puts out is word study stuff. He gives you the usage and background of every single, he picks a word.
Yeah, yeah.
And then goes through the entire scripture. It shows you where it's used and how it's used.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different take on what I do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're getting to the point where the author himself is saying, now I'm going to put all this jigsaw puzzle together for you folks. All right? And so we'll have to wait till next week for all these puzzle pieces to fit.
Are we out of time already?
We're out of time already.
Oh, man. Right? I was on a roll.
We're having so much fun. Yes.
Less than a minute.
All right.
Yahweh bless everybody.
Yahweh bless everybody. And my guest tomorrow on Restoration Hour will be True Ott. He will be joining me at 8:30 Eastern Time after the prisoner report. Okay. Thanks for listening, folks. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time.